Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Weekly. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. It's great to be back with you after a few days of traveling. Joining us today is Caleb Walker, and he is the Chief Strategy Officer for With You, With Me. Recently, the Chief of Defense Staff announced that he wants to reconstitute the Canadian Armed Forces. Here to talk about that a little more today is Caleb Walker.
Thanks, John. Great to be here. I'm really excited that the Chief Defense Staff has issued out his direction on that. It's actually something that I worked on when I was in the Army. I worked on the Managed Readiness System Review, which a lot of the so what's and a lot of the stuff that came out of his direction are what we had said back in 2019 of things we needed to work on. So hopefully as the Chief of Defense Staff, he's got the ability now to drive it forward and move things. Like the two key, like the, so basically there's three things that they need to know what the CAF's going to do. Three lines of effort. They need to grow the CAF. Right now, they're missing about 10,000 plus people, and they're supposed to be 100,000 people, reserve and reg force. They want to modernize the military personnel management system, so they want to be able to make it easier for recruiting in, retaining people, and allow flexible careers with career management tools. And they want to recalibrate operations and commitments domestically, internationally. And actually, that's something we've already talked about as well on how to use their people better so that they can still deliver force structures, but they don't have to keep relying on the same high-end talent to deliver, you know, people filling sandbags, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm really interested to talk to you about that and how this could be a couple of podcasts probably on this conversation.
Oh, for sure. Why don't we start first with the area of recalibration? We've talked about reservists, but how do they do that? What do you think the plan should be, Caleb?
Yeah, it's something we discussed before, but essentially, a lot of the times the military is using a hammer to hit nails all the and they look at every problem as it should be solved with nails, and they're kind of forced by that, probably by the request for assistance, RFAs that the government gives them. And so instead of like maybe looking at, you know, brand new reservists, maybe even people that are supplementary reserve or, you know, people that have skills and talents to solve a domestic problem, they constantly look at, the regular force unit that's available today. And it's quite expensive, like to just take a whole force that's just finished training for 9 months to be ready to deploy to Ukraine or Latvia. And it costs multi-million dollars to get that unit ready to go. And so to send them out to go fight fires and floods or what had just happened in the East Coast, not only is it probably the wrong group of people to solve the wrong problem, but it's extremely taxing on that that level of readiness. And so you have to start using the right people to solve the problem. And this is extremely important because in the actual order, these external risks that are identified is that the anticipated future shocks is more domestic emergencies from climate change, economic crises, and you're going to end up, you know, with also widespread misinformation campaigns that, you know, the force is going to have to be more flexible in solving these problems without like consuming itself to do it. And so, yeah, I really am really interested in helping recalibrate the operations. And it's something we talked about, the National Resiliency Program. How do we leverage volunteers? How do we leverage supplementary reserve? How do we leverage the reserves? So that way we can kind of still build the right force package, but not have to use the same people every time. And, what typically happens on these domestic responses is, well, instead of like sending the right kind of force, like maybe more truck drivers or more, if there's a snowfall, maybe you need to send heavy equipment operators to drive the snowplows. But instead, we'll just send like 200 people from the from the East Coast, from the regular force units that might be explosive experts or radar technicians, and we'll get them to shovel snow for 2 weeks. And it's just not the best use of their time and capability, and it drains your readiness and your force. Does that make sense, John?
It does. So there's ongoing training. It sounds like there's a communication matter there, and understanding the big picture and the right people and product. I'm curious, with this call to reconstitute the Canadian forces, does it reflect the kind of flexibility required that, you know, has gone on with the changes we've seen in the last couple of years, like the weather changes, some of the wars that have gone on, some of these viruses? Or is it the same old, I guess, is there a willingness to have a new way of thinking, in your opinion?
Well, there is a willingness, and I definitely want to see how we can help them. So they outlined in the report the innovation and creativity to support this must be encouraged. And even if the initiative is unsuccessful, you know, they'll terminate it and learn from it, but you got to allow that to happen. And so what I'd love to see is, you know, how do you find those innovative people, those creative people? And, you know, you could probably use a psychometric test of the big five, openness to change, find people that are openness to change, and then try and support them, try and get them into working groups. Because some of the people have some of the most creative and innovative ideas. They might not be the major staff officer that's in the strategic joint staff. They might actually be quite conscientious. They might not be open to change. So, you know, maybe try and get some of those master corporals, those warrants, those lieutenants, those majors across the CAF that are open to change and creative, and see what kind of ideas they come up with. So you can drive the changes that you need. And so I'd recommend like a larger psychometric testing, which they're already doing for lieutenant colonels and above, but really allow that to happen across the force so that you can find the right people to drive these different ideas. And instead of just looking at the same person who happens to be posted into the position because of, you know, filling seats and numbers, that's how postings typically work in the CAF. Instead, look for the right kind of, right person.
So psychometric testing, what kind of results can be shared? Does it work?
Yes, yeah, it works. We do it with you, with me, to help find out the right people to do roles in the new technology space. That's how we help veterans and military spouses find technology jobs, is to see that they have the right psychometrics, personality to do the role long term. But I mean, the CAF already uses psychometric testing in their recruitment, and they use psychometric testing to test if for leaders, lieutenant colonels above, as part of the new culture initiatives that the Canadian Armed Forces is doing. And so, you know, you want to find people that are open to change, innovative, creativity, start scaling that across the entire Canadian Armed Forces. And so that way they can, you can find those hidden, that hidden talent, that that those ideas to drive it. Because it's not going to come from, you know, the four or five staff officers that you happen to have posted to Ottawa. It's just not going to happen that way. Otherwise, it's just going to be the same as last year. Sally, you need some new ideas.
Yeah, exactly. I want to move on to modernization. I know we've talked about this, but what do you think is required specifically here? What steps should be taken?
Yeah, well, the simple one is that the majority of the career management is done by Excel spreadsheets in the Canadian Armed Forces. So things get lost, things get forgotten. People don't have access to their career management well, and it's a lot of stuff, smoke and mirrors, done by phone calls or text messages or what have you. And so you need a transparent, automated system that allows people to identify opportunities that they'd like to be involved in, and then why decisions are made. Every year, like, here's a story and an example, John, is that every year, every single trade, so Army, like, I'll just, if I pick on, you know, the Army, the infantry, the artillery, the armored crew managers, they all have Excel spreadsheets where they track all the positions that they're supposed to fill with all the people that they have. But because they can't link those Excel spreadsheets to the artillery, armored, infantry, and work as one, then all those positions that are combat arms, quote unquote, which is one of those, you know, trades, and the engineers, obviously, those trades are, they're not tracking certain positions that they might have to fill or could fill because it's not shared well in their Excel spreadsheets. And so that's why a lot of people find out when posting season's usually in June, they find out in May that they're going to a new position, because that's when people typically work out, oh, whoa, I have to fill this job. I wasn't even tracking it. And so there's things are lost. People don't understand opportunities. And there's no way to, track that, because Excel spreadsheets aren't doing the job. And then there's no way to actually track what position people are actually filling in an organization. So you go and you fill a position in a headquarters, and you might be against a position that's like, you're supposed to be the operations manager for this mission. But when you go to the headquarters, you're actually responsible for HR management or supply or planning or some other role that actually isn't in your position number. And so nobody can actually work out what positions are useful or important or critical and what positions are not. And I saw this actually in one of the Yale ones, and I won't say which one it is. They had identified of the 500 positions that they had, 100 of them were critical. They must be filled. But they only typically they didn't fill 20 of these quote unquote critical positions every year. So are they critical? And so it's a bit of a smoke and mirrors shell game where nobody really knows what positions they actually kind of have to fill or what they're actually filling. And so soldiers and, officers and soldiers, they typically will arrive in a new posting and they're like, OK, I'm posted to this headquarters. I don't know what this job I'm supposed to do. And they'll work out while they're being posted or within a few weeks, like what they're going to actually work on that year. And it might have nothing to do with what they expected or what their trade expected or their crew manager expected. It's just filling a role there. And so what you typically see is then you're not lining up the right people for the right job. As in, there might be someone that was posted and has years of experience in a certain aspect of the role or the profession of arms, but they'll just get randomly posted into a job that has nothing to do with any of their background. An example of this was I actually saw an Air Force major that was posted to the New Zealand Staff College. And after he finished the Staff College there, he did 3 years in strategic engagements in the New Zealand Defense Force. And he worked on Southeast Asia. So he met every single Southeast Asian country. He knew all the defense attaches. He knew all the bigwigs. He did it for 3 years. And he asked, can I come back to SJS and work on the Southeast Asia or Asia file desk as strategic engagement so I can leverage all this these relationships I have to make the Canadian engagement and strategy better? And the answer that he got back was that he was going to go become a deputy commander of a training unit in Winnipeg, which had nothing to do with any of the experience that he had just gained over the last 3 to 4 years. And so we typically don't use the right people, and we have no way of tracking like your hidden talents, your background, your other capabilities. A lot of times you're just either a position or a trade. And so like you're a navigator, then you go fill the navigator position, and we need to fill this navigator position, so you're the person to fill that position. Instead of saying, hey, you wrote this paper when you're doing staff college, you have this background, you did this job, you would be the perfect person to fill this important file to drive it. And so because, because they don't do that, inevitably everybody in some new file, it's like the first time they've ever seen something like it. And they spend like the first 9 months learning about the file. And then they usually get posted 2 months later. So you're not able to, there's no transparency in the posting because it's all done by Excel spreadsheets. There's things that are missed and lost all the time, which creates frustration and retention issues, but people just get out. You're not using the best use of your force because you don't know their hidden talents, and you're not tracking what value they could at the organization, and you're not able to drive key projects forward because you don't understand who the creative and innovative people are and what the full capability that they can provide. So anyway, it was a long answer. I'm sorry, John, but obviously I've been thinking about that one for a while.
No, and I appreciate it, actually, because I think we should delve into this a little more, if you agree, in future podcasts. But at the end of the day, it sounds like the right people are on the bus. They're just not necessarily in the right seats. And that's got to affect the modernization, as you say, and the ability to have people with the right skills and to utilize them. If you get that right, it's going to save money. It's going to help with the modernization. But it's also, I've got to believe that's going to help attract new people and help with retention. And I'm going to imagine, and I hope we can get into this in future episodes as well, I think technology is going to play a huge role in that, and certainly some of the stuff that with you, with me, is working on.
Yeah, it definitely will. I would agree. I mean, the talent in the Canadian Armed Forces is world class. There is absolute weapons, great people in that organization. When you don't solve those other issues, either you're not using them to the right capability or to drive what you're trying to get out of them, or they're going to get frustrated. And then they leave. And so, you know, the reason why they join is they join to serve. They want to drive organization forward. They love the military. So how do you use them better? And you're right. The key thing that the military has to remember is that like 50% of people join the military because they have family or friends that are in the military, and they've kind of like they join because they know somebody. It's a very family. It's a tradition. It's very it's a family business. And so if you have people leaving because their talent's not used properly, their postings weren't organized, there's no transparency, it was an issue that they couldn't sort it out, then they become your worst cheerleader. Because like realistically, 50% of your force joins because they know somebody. And so you need to fix that. You need to fix the core before you can work about the extremities, like the retention and the recruitment. You fix the core, and then the rest will kind of take care of itself after that. So on top of that, you'd want to make sure that organizations that already have people that are relatively committed to joining the military, which is like the reserves, is the perfect. It's actually the biggest recruitment organization. You know, it's the biggest place that the military actually recruits from. You want to make it as easy as possible, and you want them to have the best engagement so that they actually join the regular force too. You know, that's the kind of things you need to fix. Make sure people in your organization become your biggest cheerleaders because they're the ones that actually do the best, most recruitment. And then make sure that the biggest recruiting pool, the reserves, are enabled and to join as fast as possible. And make sure it doesn't take them like 18 months to join the military. Otherwise, they, particularly in this job market where you can onboard into a company in like 3 weeks, you can't wait around that long. Like people are just not going to. They might already be on to their second job after 18 months, and they might already be in a different career, and they've lost interest in what they originally were thinking about.
No, exactly. Final question. In your experience, have you come across privately or publicly any organizations that are doing this well? Because some of the things you're mentioning here are a challenge for everybody, including private sector.
Yeah, I would essentially all militaries are having the exact same problem. I think the American military actually missed its target by 50% and just reported by the American military a couple weeks ago. The UK has the same issues. The issue that the defense forces have is that they're trying to transform and be ready for a new kind of labor market, but they still have a great value proposition of a sense of purpose, upskilling people, and being exciting. As long as you can make it more accessible and people enjoy their careers, I think that it will really help. But as you're right, the private sector has a lot of trouble with this as well. It is a bit of a market where you can kind of switch over to different roles. But typically, if an organization upskills their own people, develops their own people, and has a great relationship with their people, the people will stay for less money. As long as they know that they're giving more value, they're able to drive stuff, they're able to use their innovation, their creativity, and that they're being heard. So the organizations that do this well take those things pretty seriously, and they're able to actually do it. So yeah, there's definitely some success stories out there. But the government and military are obviously, you know, having a hard time. It's well documented in the press. So that's something that they're going to have to look at doing. And I think that this reconstitution order is going to help that.
Yeah, for sure. Look forward to digging into this in future episodes. You've been listening to Vanguard Weekly. Our special guest today has been Caleb Walker, Chief Strategy Officer from With You With Me. And we've been talking about re-enabling the CAF reconstitution.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly podcast series, CGE Weekly podcast series, Vanguard Radio podcast, and CGE Radio podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer, or playing device.